From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, forget Schwab's drugstore. The internet is the place to get discovered. We'll talk to one Hollywood agent scouring the internet for the next online star. Also, The Writer Speaks, Part 3. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Don't go anywhere. It's The Business from NPR. It was an unusual week in Hollywood, with the Golden Globe nominations kicking off the annual mouth-foaming that is the Oscar race, with some anomalous nominations. Under the rules that govern the Globes, there is no Best Foreign Film category, despite the fact that the Globes are presented by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. Instead, there's only an award for Best Foreign Language Film. As a result, two of the five Best Foreign Language Film nominees were American movies. Mel Gibson's Mayan dialect-flecked Apocalypto, and Clint Eastwood's Japanese language Letters from Iwo Jima. The fact that both shoved aside genuinely foreign films is of no small source of discomfort to the Rules Committee of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. The HFPA may change its criteria next year, since Gibson has announced his intention to direct a remake of The Miracle Worker, filmed entirely in sign language. Speaking of Gibson, French film star Sami Nasiri tried lamely to use Mel's sorry, drunk mea culpa to explain away what the BBC describes as his insulting and racially abusing French police. This year's winner of the Best Actor Award at the Cannes Film Festival was sentenced to 6 months in prison and fined €8,000, and he's due back in court next week facing charges of assaulting a man in a Paris restaurant. That man's name? Michael Richards. No, we're kidding. That's a joke. In other legal news, a federal judge on this side of the pond ruled last week that Universal Pictures may release the kidnapping thriller Alpha Dog as planned on January 12th. Attorneys for Hollywood, on whose alleged crimes Alpha Dog is based, brought the motion on the grounds that releasing the film will make it impossible for their client to get a fair trial by an unbiased jury. They vowed to appeal. Interestingly, lawyers for Jesse James Hollywood also filed a motion to block the DVD release of the Tim Allen comedy Shaggy Dog, on the grounds that his premise was just plain ridiculous. The judge agreed on this point, but had to overrule because, unfortunately, Shaggy Dog is already available on DVD. Also from the crime files of The Business, Joe Francis, the founder of the Girls Gone Wild video empire, was fined and sentenced to 8 hours of community service every month for the next 30 after he pleaded guilty to federal charges of using underage girls in his videos. Francis makes an estimated $40 million a year exploiting drunk coeds, and so the judge decided that a fine alone wouldn't have been, quote, meaningful punishment, unquote. Francis did agree to pay $1.6 million for using drunken 17-year-olds in videos filmed at a Panama City beach during spring break. It appears he's gotten the message. A contrite Francis has pledged to use only drunken 18-year-olds in the future. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up next, trolling for talent on that interweb thing. Liam Sullivan produced and starred in a hugely popular viral video comedy called Shoes, in which a disgruntled daughter goes in search of the perfect pair of shoes. Shoes.
Oh my god, shoes. These shoes rule. These shoes suck. These shoes suck. These shoes suck.
I think you have too many shoes.
Shut up.
I think you have too many shoes.
Shut up.
I think you have too many shoes.
Shut up.
I think you have too many shoes.
Shut up.
A young assistant at United Talent Agency suggested that they should sign him, but his bosses applied their usual litmus test. Can he be the next Jim Carrey? The answer, unfortunately, was no, and so after making initial overtures, the agency had to say no to Liam Sullivan. But the times, they are changing. UTA decided to create a group to troll the vast depths of the web, looking for new talent specifically for the online space. Three web-savvy assistants, including the one who championed Liam Sullivan, were promoted to agent to staff the new unit. Their desks are covered with large Apple monitors on which they spend a lot of time doing what might get you fired in most other offices at UTA, looking at web videos. They've looked at thousands, and now they've signed about 24 clients. What's particularly revolutionary about the new unit is that they are welcoming unsolicited submissions, something that's always been a big-time no-no in a town that coined the phrase, "Don't call us, we'll call you." We sat down in the offices of UTA Online with the boss of the three new agents, Brent Weinstein. Brent Weinstein, welcome to the business.
Thank you very much.
What's the economy here? How does this work? How do you monetize these sudden viral successes?
It's difficult to look at something that's already viral and say, how do we make money on it? There's a lot of ways that we could probably do that. What we're focused on is identifying artists who have enough of a skill set or enough ambition creatively to create product that we can monetize moving forward. So we might find someone that had a big success on YouTube, and we certainly want to do everything we can to help them monetize that particular effort. But what we're more excited about and more interested in is helping them take their next idea or their next 10 ideas and finding ways for them to make money doing what they love. So whether it's selling it to AOL or MSN or putting them with MTV or Comedy Central, or finding completely new ways to finance content directly with advertisers or individuals and venture capitalists who are looking to get into the space. There's a lot of money flowing into the internet.
So it's not like the half-life of people's, you know, careers is getting shorter. That is, you would think that, oh, well, you know, with the advent of viral, maybe it doesn't matter that they have another album in them or even a whole album or a whole career ahead of them. There's, you know, the idea that maybe we could just make money off this one thing. That hasn't arrived yet.
It may have. It's certainly not what we're interested in, and it's not what we set this division up to do. The honest truth is, when we look for new clients, we're not even that concerned with whether something has become viral. We're looking for elite artistic talent, people who have the skill set to succeed on a lot of different levels. And if it so happens that only 100 people have seen what they've done, or only 1,000. Listen, you know, marketing, publicity, promotion, these are things that are hard to come by, even in a world where viral is sort of a hot buzzword. But if we see something and we think it's great, then it's our job to help nurture that talent and put them in a position where millions of people can see it. We get approached all the time by people saying, I have a YouTube video with a gazillion hits, or I have 1 million friends on MySpace. That doesn't necessarily mean that those people have a skill set or the drive or the ambition to have a long-lasting career in entertainment.
Let's talk about who you look for instance. I mean, well, let's pick somebody who's made headlines recently, like someone like Ask a Ninja,
sure.
For instance. First of all, for people who don't know what a ninja is other than a trained assassin of the shogun of Japan.
Sure. Ask a Ninja is the creative product of two individuals, The end result is a singular ninja that appears semi-regularly on the internet through their own branded channel on YouTube and a lot of other locations, answering questions that have been written in from the users. And the questions have nothing to do with typical ninja domains. It's everyday questions, and the way that they're answered are hilarious.
Austin asks a ninja!
Do ninjas play miniature golf?
Nope.
No, we do not.
But we will play miniature golf, which has some parallels to miniature golf, but I really would not recommend it for a fifth birthday party. In a miniature golf course, they don't have the astro carpet. The turf is made up of bad memories.
From, you know, the point of view as agents wanting to bring on a new client, I think that what we are usually more focused on is the artist behind the brand, what they're interested in doing, what their potential is beyond what they've already done. Having said that, you know, what they've done is their resume, it's their calling card. So when I call someone on their behalf who hasn't heard of them, I can say, listen, you should really sit down with Doug and Kent, and before you do that, I want to send you a link to their show Ask a Ninja. And I know that whoever I'm speaking to is going to watch that and really get a kick out of it and know that these guys are talented.
Is it fair to say that you can argue all day long with a development executive at Universal or at NBC, just to name, you know, one media hydra, and their taste is admittedly absolute in that they have green light over a project and say yes or no, but you can't argue with the fact that a million people have downloaded this and found it funny. You know, that the stats are sort of incontrovertible when once you have a calling card like, say, these ninja guys have. Does that change how you look for talent, or is that sort of not the point? Is it ultimately a gut business anyway?
I think ultimately it's a gut business. Certainly, the way that these different platforms have come together and the way that we can track how many people have seen a particular piece of content, you know, that can help sometimes. And oftentimes it helps us justify, you know, what our initial instincts are. But at the end of the day, it's a gut reaction. You know, we have a fantastic group of agents that work in this online division. And if they come to me and say that they saw something online that they think is fantastic and they want to be in business with the artist behind it, I don't care if it's been seen 2 times or 2 million times. Because, you know, I know that if we work with that artist and help them get the resources they need and the introductions that they need, that whatever they do next is hopefully going to be huge. Now, in the meantime, if what they've done that's been seen 2 times ultimately becomes seen 2 million times, you know, that just makes us feel better about, you know, our instincts.
As things progress, as YouTube becomes, if it's possible, to become even more popular, as MySpace becomes even more popular, does the ability to find, you know, sort of separate the wheat from the chaff get harder? Because I would think that for the same reason that agencies say, hey, look, please don't send us your script. Please don't send us your headshots. We only take solicited material. For the same reason, I mean, eventually film students will all get wise, and in the same way that people used to send their opus to Steven Spielberg's office marked personal and confidential, in the hopes that they would become the next Joe Dante or whatever, won't this happen online? And doesn't that make your job harder once people get wise to the internet?
You know, listen, if you're an aspiring filmmaker and you have a student film, listen, you should do everything you can to get people to see it. And if that means uploading it to a site, absolutely you should. What I am focusing on, what I want, you know, our team of agents to be focused on isn't, you know, 90-minute, 120-minute, 180-minute student films or indie films. You know, we're focused on stuff, again, that we think that we can monetize on the internet. There's this marketplace that's coming together very quickly, and we're hopefully being a big part of that. And what we want is artists who know how to produce content for this fast-growing medium. In most cases, that means short-form content. In many cases, that means comedy, although that isn't the only thing that works. We have these clients, a group of clients called Big Fantastic, that produce a daily murder mystery soap opera called Sam Has 7 Friends. It's not comedy, but it's short form content. It's addictive.
Stay.
No, I can't.
Just a little while. Just 2 more minutes.
If I get back in that bed with you, there is zero chance of me leaving in 2 minutes.
And why is that exactly?
Because I'd have to kiss you.
Again, these are people who, they have this one thing that they're doing that's fantastic. It fits within the mold of what we're looking for in terms of formatting. And they have 7 other ideas right behind that that we think are spectacular, that we absolutely believe we can help them get made and getting them paid in the process.
In the talent business, there's usually a 1-in-10 rule, which is that, you know, 10% of your clients pay for the other 90%. That is, the gross players who are making $25 million or even more than that per movie are the ones who are making it possible to represent, you know, this young ingenue or that young writer-director or whatever. Have the economics changed in online? That is there a business in this room, in this division? Can you be profitable? Or do you exist solely to hunt down the next Spielberg or Soderbergh or whatever Berg you want to throw in there?
It's L.A. There's a lot of Bergs.
There are a lot of Bergs.
I think absolutely that there's a real business here. You know, I don't want to, nor can I go into details, but we absolutely plan on being profitable right from the very beginning in terms of our online activities here. We sign people because we think that there's business there, and we're reaching out to buyers who have, you know, sincere intentions on creating original content and paying real money to do so. And, you know, we're amassing a lot of resources and a lot of creative talent in the belief that this isn't a short-term play, that as great as YouTube is and as fantastic as this notion of user-generated content is, that, you know, it's conditioning people to consume content on the internet, but at some point, people who like watching content on the internet are going to want better content. And when they want better content and when they want better content more frequently, someone has to provide it. And there are a lot of outlets that want to be that provider, and but even they need people to work with. And, you know, like agency roles, you know, dating back to the beginning of time, in Hollywood speak at least, you know, we serve to be that middleman. We introduce artists to distribution, and we help find distribution for artists.
After we turned the microphones off, we talked a bit more about UTA's online clients. Some are homespun web celebs, like the previously mentioned Ask a Ninja guys. There's also Bubba and Big of Rednecks TV.
Well, hey, a big howdy howdy, folks. Welcome to my first episode of 4 Long Minutes with Hugh G. Johnson. The producers... Oh, well, thank you. Go right ahead. We've got us a live studio audience now. This thing is really taking off.
And neo-existential monologist Z. Frank.
When I was in kindergarten, all the kids in my neighborhood would meet at a certain playground near my school. The playground itself didn't change much. A slide, a jungle gym, some swings, and a collection of horses on springs that sometimes worked and sometimes didn't. Those were cool, but it was the expectation of playing with other kids that got me excited to go. Whether I realized it or not, there was a sense of democracy there, and I was ignorant of or unimpressed by the inequalities that existed. Anyone could come, and everyone was a potential playmate. Hi, my name's Billy. I like your fireman's hat. I like fire trucks. You want to hold hands?
But most of UTA's online clients have been creating sophisticated web content, like Big Fantastic, which produces the Sam Has 7 Friends serial. There's also sketch comedians Dutch West TV.
What is that on your chest?
This? Oh, it's nothing. I fell down the stairs. What?
You have a really big swastika on your chest.
It's a scar. It's an old scar. Okay, fine. I admit it. It's a long time ago. I got it from an Indian reservation.
That's f***ed up.
Come on, let's have a water balloon fight, huh? Heck, it's summer!
But noticeably absent from UTA's client list are the top just-a-guy-in-his-bedroom-with-a-webcam personalities that are so hugely popular on sites like YouTube.
Loca, 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 loca.
Hey, what up, everybody? That's right, the queen bee's back up in the beehive. How's all my little worker bees been doing?
It's Justin. Life on the run.
Boring.
My name's Gary. Ever since last Monday, my life's been pretty tough.
Dude, no one can put both their hands in that shredder, I'm telling you right now.
I'm telling you, I can do it.
There's a lot of things that I have to get off my chest, and I'm very frustrated lately, and I feel like I need to talk to people.
Hello, YouTubers. Now, this isn't my usual blog, and I suppose I put that bit on the front about telling secrets to maybe catch your attention.
While some of those folks might have taken meetings, the truth is the web isn't necessarily making Hollywood more democratic. It's just making celebrity more democratic. Whereas before, the media would have to pick up on you to make you famous or infamous. Now you can get your 15 minutes through YouTube or MySpace. But to really make it in show business, you still need creative talent and a good agent in your corner. Coming up after a short break, The Writer Speaks, Part 3. You're listening to The Business from NPR. This is The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. The Writers Guild Foundation book, Doing It for Money, The Agony and Ecstasy of Writing and Surviving in Hollywood, is filled with essays from successful writers. In installment 3 of our ongoing series we call The Writer Speaks, we invited Alan Kirschenbaum to come down and talk with us and read his story. He has written, produced, and directed episodes of the sitcoms Yes, Dear, Everybody Loves Raymond, Coach, and many others.
I write television shows. I write comedies, sitcoms mostly over the last 17 years. I moved out to Los Angeles on a Sunday and started my first job on a sitcom called Dear John on Monday. And through today, 17 years, not been out of work. Thank God, thank God, thank God. And thank CAA. I had a wonderful agent who named Adam Berkowitz at the William Morris Agency in New York, who had just been promoted from being an assistant to being an agent, and I was the first person that he signed. And for 6 months, I had my own individual agent at the William Morris Agency. But because he was so new, he was and was sending scripts out to Los Angeles where he knew nobody, I wasn't able to get a job. And somehow one of my scripts came across the desk of a manager here in Los Angeles who had a very successful management firm, and he wanted to manage me. And I said, I don't need a manager. I have an agent in New York. And it was impressed upon me that sometimes it's not just the material that you're submitting, but who's the material is being submitted from. And I basically told this manager, if you can get me a job, you can be my manager. And within a week, I had a bunch of job offers, and he got me a job, and I still have the same manager and same agent to this day. But I did fly out here on a Sunday and drive through the gates of Paramount Pictures on Monday to start my new job and my new life as a Los Angeles television writer. You know, the weird thing about becoming a TV writer is until you get that first job, it's a very solitary existence for the most part. A lot of people have partners, and I think that is a, you know, gives them a little more of a taste of what it's going to be like. I stayed in my apartment on the Lower East Side of New York and wrote a script or two and then suddenly was thrust into this very social form of writing where there's 8 or 9 or 10 people sitting around a table basically talking and yelling at each other. And what I found out was I liked that better than the being alone in a room somewhere writing a script. It's great fun when people say, what do you do every day at work? For the most part, I go into a big room with a big table that is at various times of the day catered with wonderful food, and we sit around and try to make each other laugh. It's really, really a wonderful way to spend each day. There are far more people that work in television comedy that are wonderful in a room and quick and funny and great in a pitch, who then have to go out and sit down and produce the work that can't do it than the other way around. There's not a lot of people I found that really are quiet and have very, very little outwardly funny to say that then go off into a room and come back with a script that is chock full of jokes. Now, they're within that sort of range. There are people who are more so one way and more so the other way. But for the most part, I think there is a lot of people in the TV business who've gotten where they've gotten to because they're quick and funny and charming and fun to work with. But at the end of the day, their contribution is not there in the show or on the page. And that's why the people who can do both, who can be both clever and charming. And I think of some of the people I've worked with, like Phil Rosenthal, who did Everybody Loves Raymond, who I've worked with for a long time, Greg Garcia, who does My Name is Earl. They're generally the funniest person in the room, but they're also, when they go off to do the work, their work is as good as anybody in the room. You have to have a few different skills when you work on a TV comedy show. You have to be a good story constructor in your head. You have to be a good script writer on the page, and you have to be funny, you know, and quick to come up with rewriting lines and identifying problems and fixing problems. Now, the way we've always sort of described it is it's like being a baseball player. If you're a five-tool player, if you can hit, run, throw, field, do all those things, you become a superstar. But if you can only do one or two, as long as you do them very well, there's a place for you on the staff of a show. And I'm always sort of a solid B-plus student in about 20 different categories, and I think that's why I've been able to keep working.
Here's Alan Kirshenbaum with his story, One Joke.
Sometimes it all comes down to one joke, or one line, or one moment, or even one image, I guess, but in comedy, it's one simple, beautiful, perfect joke. The series Yes, Dear, which I created with my partner, Greg Garcia, would never have gotten on the air without a sight gag near the very end of the pilot script, a gag that I'm lucky to say my partner came up with, a gag that is directly responsible for over 100 people making comfortable livings for the past 6 seasons. The Yesteryear pilot told a story in which Greg Warner, our hero, was assigned the task of caring for his young son Sammy, while his wife Kim was off to a spa with her recently moved-in sister Christine. Christine's husband Jimmy and their 2 young boys were also at home with Greg and Sam. Jimmy was a bad influence on Greg, and in this case convinced him that rather than spend the day at the hot playground with their kids, as they have told their wives they would, they should instead go to an Indian casino and gamble. Against his better judgment, Greg agrees. While at the casino, Sammy takes his first shaky steps and walks for the first time. Greg joyfully videotapes the momentous occasion, but then realizes he cannot show Kim the tape or he will be caught in his lie. To the rescue rides Jimmy, who takes the tape to a friend of his who is an editor and has the background changed from the casino to a park.
Your son's very first steps.
Look at him. He's walking. He's really doing it.
When Greg shows the tape to Kim, Sammy appears to take his first steps in a bucolic Los Angeles park.
Where's that park? It's beautiful.
And Greg is elated until Sammy starts to walk across a beautiful, shimmering lake. It seemed funny in the stage directions, but it wasn't until we actually saw the footage the day we were shooting the pilot that we realized just how funny the gag was. So I was very careful to give explicit instructions to the audience switcher, who provides the feed to the live audience, how to cut the footage against the reactions of the characters. Somehow, instinctively, I knew the stakes, and I told her, if we do this right, this joke could get us on the air. When it played in front of the live audience, it was like an explosion. Loud and long and rolling, Greg and I looked at each other. Between us, we'd produced hundreds of sitcom episodes, and we'd never heard a laugh like that. When we submitted the rough cut to the network, we were told that Leslie Moonves, the head of CBS, was laughing so hard he was banging his hand on his desk. When they showed it to the focus group at the network testing session, the needle actually pinned at the highest mark, something the testing people said they had never seen before. And finally, when CBS introduced the fall lineup that May at Carnegie Hall, that clip was shown, and a jaded audience of advertising people laughed just as loud and just as long. The pilot for Yesteryear was a good, solid, professional episode of a series with great potential, which made it better than most. But quickly, people who had no idea what Yesteryear was started talking about that one where the kid walks on water. There were plenty of other pilots that spring that had potential, but most of them never got a chance to be in the race, a chance to reach that potential, because they didn't have that one great joke. And sometimes that's all it takes.
And that's The Business. Matt Holtzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com and click on KCRW A to Z. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.